Welcome to the Entrepreneurd Podcast. If you're growing a brand around your nerdy passion, you can learn from business and marketing podcasts, or you can learn from nerds like you. This is the show built by bloggers, cosplayers, gamers, artists, and other entrepreneurs that are making the things you love. How's it going, entrepreneurs? Welcome to episode 60 of the Entrepreneurd Podcast by Under the Capes. I'm your host, Tim, and I've got a great episode for you this week. I'm speaking with Heather Antos. She is a comics editor that has worked at Marvel, credited with creating Gwenpool. She's worked on the Star Wars line, creating characters like Dr. Aphra. Currently is an editor at Valiant, working on books like Livewire and Quantum and Woody. You also might be familiar with her if you have listened to or if you got to attend our panel at Fan Expo Boston this August. We did How to Turn Your Geeky Passion into an Entrepreneur Business, and Heather was part of that panel offering some great advice, answering questions about growing your brand and finding time for your passion and building an audience. So you can check that out at underthecapes.com/episode57. But this week we get to go a lot more in depth about how she broke into the comics industry, tips for networking both online and in person, and a lot more. I think comics creators are going to get a lot out of this. I also think anybody that is interested in breaking into a creative industry or just looking to start a brand of any kind. We talk about a lot of great advice for any kind of entrepreneur. I think you're going to get a lot out of this one. So let's dive right on in. All right. I'm now joined by Heather Antos. Heather, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Tim.
Yeah, so can you tell me a little bit about how you got started as a comics editor?
Oh my gosh, what's the nutshell version? my background, my education was in theater and film production, but I had always been a huge fan of comics, had been writing and drawing since I was a little kid, and when I graduated college, I was kind of figuring out what it was I wanted to do, what I wanted to focus my career in, and a friend said to me, he's like, well, you've always liked comics. Why don't you do that? And my mind was kind of blown that at 22 years old, I had never considered comics as an option for a career. It's not like on career day, the writer of Batman just happens to come into your middle America elementary school and tells you about their job. That doesn't happen. And so for the first time, I guess at 22, I figured out, oh my gosh, this is it. This is what I want to do. So I just started doing a lot of research. I started going to comic cons on social media, talking with other creators, trying to get a sense of what roles were out there that made sense for me. And so like any good millennial, I began just tweeting editors. I just reached out. Who's going to be at this Comic-Con? I'm going to be there. Will you talk with me? That's how I met comics editors Jordan White and Scott Alley. And we met up at different Comic-Cons, and they walked me through what it is an editor does. And it was C2E2 2014 that I walked out and knew, this is it. I want to be a comics editor. And from there, it was just kind of horse blinders on of not a matter of if, but a matter of when. I started self-publishing, anthologies, started doing work for free for other creators and editing, until I got to a point where people were paying me. And eventually Jordan White, who, I'd originally learned comics editing from, reached out to me and said, hey, Marvel's hiring. Do you want to interview? Of which I said yes. And a couple months, obviously. And the rest is history. I got brought on. But Yeah, I basically, the internet shell is I decided I wanted to do it. So I started doing it, got to a point where people started paying me to do it. And then Marvel came knocking.
And yeah, that's definitely the clear like route to doing it. But the interesting part that I didn't realize was you knew you wanted to be in comics, but you didn't really know what in comics, or maybe you didn't know what that entailed exactly. So you just started like educating yourself and meeting people. And like, how long until, like you said, 2014 is when you knew, how long was that process of like hitting conventions and meeting people before you were like, this is it?
So I've always been a really fast learner. honestly, it was less than a year between me deciding I wanted to do comics and then getting hired at Marvel, which is not the normal path. And I know that. and I don't want to put that out there as this is normal by any means. It's not normal. I had an insanely quick trajectory. A lot of right time, right place, right preparation. Cause that's key, is being prepared. And when opportunity comes knocking, you know, I knew, though I liked to draw, I knew I didn't want to be an artist. Though I liked to write, I knew I didn't want to be a writer. And I had all of this background producing film and theater behind me that I didn't want those skills to go to waste. So when I began, you know, pursuing the comics industry, it all came down to what is a good fit for me? How can I find something where skills are transferable? And it just so happens that comics editing is very, very similar to producing film and producing theater. So much so that the majority, I was surprised to find out when I joined Marvel that the majority of editors in Marvel have a theater background. Cause it's very, you know, in comics, it's coming up with an idea, putting together a cast, you have a budget, you have a deadline that you have to hit no matter what. And if someone drops out, if someone can't make it, you have to figure it out. Cause at the end of the day, the show must go on, the book must go to print. It's storytelling, it's visual medium, you know, of course there are different things that go to comics as opposed to theater, but the basic principles are very, very similar.
Yeah. And you mentioned like you built this network and then you kind of built your body of work and you found the right opportunities at the right time. And I think it definitely is those, like, you gained a reputation as someone who could put together projects independently. And then you were also meeting the right people and working with the right people at the time and kind of quickly put it all together.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I always joke that if I was to do a TED Talk, it would be called Don't Be a Dick and Do the Thing. Mm-hmm. Because ultimately, that's what it comes down to in any industry, I think, but especially creative industries. It's, you know, comics especially is such a tiny, tiny, tiny community that for the most part, everyone who lasts in it, everyone you meet is a really nice, good person. And it's because, you know, it's not a very rewarding industry. It doesn't pay a lot. You know, it's super stressful. You know, you don't get a lot of free time. You don't get a lot of weekends because your weekends are at conventions. You know, you're working a lot of nights because of deadlines, 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 deadlines. And you're working with a lot of different people that, you know, be nice with each other. Everyone's in it together. There's no reason to be a dick. So don't be a dick because people remember who's a dick and no one wants to work with a dick. And then do the thing as, you know, like if you say you're going to do something, do it. And if for whatever reason, you know, life happens, that's completely understandable. But say you get sick or something happens to a family member or, you know, a tornado wrecks through your house, like just communicate. Because, you know, that way we can still figure out how to do the thing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like that's at the end of the day, you know, in comics, it's, as an editor, the people I look to hire to work with are people who are easy to work with and do the things they say they're going to do.
Yeah, because like you were going up to the Jordan Whites and the Scott Alleys and saying like, okay, I want to be a comics editor, and then you know they were probably like, all right, like she was a nice girl, and then maybe forgot all about you, or like saw 10 other people that day that said I want to be a comics editor, and then you started producing stuff and
exactly.
kind of came back like, okay, she's someone who's going to work. Like,
well, and that's the thing. Like, I meet a lot of younger creators that say, oh, I want to write, or I want to be a writer, or I want to be an artist, or I want to, you know, do X, Y, and Z. And I ask, well, what are you working on? And the next line is 99% of the time is always, well, I have this idea. You know, everyone has an idea. Literally everyone down the street, stop anyone down the street and ask, what's your idea for a novel? What's your idea for a podcast? Everyone has one. But it's the, you know, it's the 2% that actually do it, that are ever going to get anywhere. And, you know, for me, it doesn't have to be the best product, in order for me to hire someone or for me to have an eye on someone. But for me, I want to see someone who's putting in effort. Because someone who's putting in effort, someone who's self-motivated, that's someone I can work with. That's someone I can coach. That's someone who wants it. And that speaks volumes, you know, when I do portfolio reviews with people, you know, at a show in Chicago, and then I do a portfolio review with that same person 6 months down the road at New York. Am I looking at the same pages in their portfolio, or have they done work in between then? Doesn't matter if the work is necessarily better, but are they working? Are they trying to improve? Like, that stands out to me.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, as a for a comics editor that's independently producing their own stuff, what's the path there? Like, how could someone doing that work find the right artists and writers and put together an independent project?
I mean, being a part of a community, both digital and in person, goes a long, long way, is very helpful with that. I was very lucky when I was starting out in Metro Detroit and in Michigan. I knew a couple of creators there, and when they learned that I was interested in, you know, expanding my network and meeting other people, they introduced me to other people and other creators and writers and artists. And so that gave me my comics community, my comics family. At the same time, participating in the online discussions, you know, on social media, on Twitter and Facebook, and part of different comics groups and forums, you know, that's how you meet people. That's how you meet other creators. One of the cool things, about when I was starting out 5-6 years ago, there was this hashtag that was used a lot that I don't see as much anymore, but it was just the Make Comics hashtag. And creators like Steve Orlando, James Tynion, Max Visaggio, who were all nobodies at that time, you know, none of us were any names, none of us had done anything at that time. But we all participated in the online discussion of, you know, this is what I'm working on. This is, you know, what are you guys working on? Let's help promote each other's stuff. Oh, you're looking for an artist. I know a guy here. Let me recommend this guy. And then it's kind of been really cool to see how all of our careers have progressed. And we all just started just as little nobodies on Twitter using a Make Comics hashtag.
Yeah, and connecting with the same like-minded people that are also making things and getting better and building their networks and kind of all rising each other up.
Yeah, I mean, it's all about a sense of community. Like I said, you know, don't be a dick. We're all in this together. We're all working together. You still see it now, you know. You still see it now. Every once in a while, I'll tweet out like, hi, you know, I'm looking for a writer in this sort of vein. Like, who are you guys interested in? You know, and it's building the sense of community and network with fans that also helps when you do have work that you're putting out there. They're more likely to want to check it out because they feel like they were a part of it.
And yeah, you started your own hashtag for helping people kind of do a little promotion, the Signal Boost Sunday.
I did. Yeah. I try to do it. I used to do it every Sunday, and that got to be very overwhelming and would take over my weekends. And so to try and set some boundaries, I try to do the first Sunday of every month, Signal Boost Sunday. And it's quite simply, you know, the rules are, if you're a creator of any kind, it doesn't just have to be comics. Just promote yourself, put your name, what you do, links to web stores, websites, whatever, in your tweet to me, use the hashtag, and I will retweet. I will give you a boost, to my platform. The only rule is you also have to, boost someone else too. Because if I'm going to pay it forward and I want to use my platform to help other people connect with you, I want you to get in the habit of supporting other creators as well. It shouldn't be just be a selfish thing. You know, we're all in this together. We're all helping each other out. We should all be checking out each other's works and supporting each other. And, you know, the reason I did it is I know I would not have gotten to Marvel as quickly as I did had it not been for other people helping me out. And so I want to help out others, you know, as best as I can. And even if that's as simple as a retweet or a tweet or a little boost to get just the right eyes on the project, because sometimes that's all it takes. It's the least I can do. And also, I just think Twitter should just be a more positive space. And I like to think that this gives it a little bit more of a glisten of positivity.
There are definitely those positive pockets of it that can be pretty good.
Yeah.
And yeah, the other, has that been the best way that you've found to promote your work on social media? Or has it been meeting people at conventions? What have you found the most success with?
I think I've cracked Twitter for my own personal, you know, uses. I don't know how else to explain it other than I get it. I get how Twitter works, and I know how to use it to my advantages. It certainly has helped me build a brand and build a following. There has been so many people I've met at conventions who come up to my table and say, I'm a huge fan of your Twitter. You know, just a couple weeks ago at Toronto Fan Expo, I had someone come up to me and just go, you know, oh, I'm a huge, huge fan of you. I'm a huge fan of your Twitter, but I have to admit, you know, I don't know any of your work. And I'm like, I'm at my table and I just gesture and I'm like, well, now's the perfect chance to check it out. So yeah, I've definitely figured out how to build an audience on Twitter that is now starting to translate into my actual work, which is fantastic. You know, but on the flip side, doing panels at shows and talking to fans in person, specifically even the panel that you had me on last month as well. You know, I meet a lot of first time fans that way at these panels that then come up to my tables afterwards that then want to, you know, talk more and follow and ask questions. And, I think there's definitely pros to both in person and social media. But I think they go hand in hand. I think it's really important to not just hide in our studios as creators, but to get out there and build those in person connections, because that's how you build a lifelong fan, I think, is having a personal touch.
Yeah. And yeah, the strategies are probably pretty similar. You know, don't be a dick to people.
Yeah.
Help signal boost people when you can, and post penguins as much as possible.
Absolutely. Well, that's me. I don't know if penguins will work for anyone else. I certainly won't complain if anyone else is posting penguins, but it works
that's
for me.
That's your niche you've carved out.
I have. I'm very, you know, it's funny. I was just talking about this the other day with a friend of how thankful I am that my brand just happens to be my favorite thing in the world. And I didn't force it. It just kind of happened organically. And that penguins and ice cream have just become my brand.
Yeah, that's awesome. Authenticity.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, like you were saying, getting, like doing the panels and stuff, it is also the, like, not just doing the same, like, talking to the same people on Twitter or going to the same convention and talking to the same people. Like, you're getting outside of your normal group and meeting a few new people in a new, like, doing a panel or trying out different things that introduce you to different audiences that you've never, had never heard of you, you've never seen them.
Yeah, I think it's important to, you know, keep things fresh and add some variety, you know, don't, my philosophy is if I'm going to go to a show I was at last year, right? So I just did, for instance, I just did Boston Fan Expo and Toronto Fan Expo. If I'm going to do those shows next year, those same shows, because I'm more than likely seeing the same people there, the same, you know, local fan base, I want to make sure I have different products to promote to those people, as well as appear on different panels than I was on, the year prior, because, you know, if I'm going to be seeing the same people, I want to make sure I have something new and something fresh for them, that it's not just the same experience. Or if I don't have new products to have at my table, then I'm going to probably choose to go to different shows. That way, you know, I'm seeing new people.
Yeah. All right. So don't invite you to next year's panel. Noted.
No. I mean, I'll do that too.
There's more panels.
Yeah.
But yeah, the other thing that that you've done to like help people out and something different is helping people with Kickstarter.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering what the advice there is.
Oh my gosh, there's so much. I joke and say I could teach a class on Kickstarter, but I have taught classes on Kickstarter. I think the biggest, I mean, if I was to give a quick tip, the biggest thing that I think people don't realize when it comes to Kickstarter is how much pre-planning goes into building a Kickstarter. I think a lot of people think, oh, I can just build it in a weekend and then click go and forget about it. And that's not really the case at all. Especially in today's, landscape where there are so many Kickstarters happening all at once and so many good Kickstarters happening all at once. It's just like walking into a mall and saying, well, I need to buy a t-shirt. Well, you have so many options, you know, not just so many different stores, but you have so many options within those stores that it's so important to have a marketing strategy to understand when you're launching and why you're launching then and how you're promoting not only digitally, but also locally. And keeping in mind, you know, so many people forget to take into account shipping fees. And I don't just mean stamps, but I also mean like boxes and tape, and not everything is going to fit in an envelope. And, you know, there's so much that goes into it that, you know, if you're planning on launching a Kickstarter for the first time, like give yourself time to do adequate research, give yourself time to fail. And it is okay to fail on your first Kickstarter. It's normal. It's not necessarily a reflection on your product per se, but usually on your promotion. Yeah, I've actually written a few blogs on it that you can find on my website if you go to it on Kickstarter specifically. And I've talked on numerous podcasts about it in depth, that you can find on my website. But yeah, the biggest thing is like, give yourself room to research and really understand what you're getting into.
Yeah, the actual campaign should start, or the planning at least, should start months before the Kickstarter ever launches.
Yeah. I think I gave myself, for my first Kickstarter, I gave myself 3 months to build it and research it and get it ready. And though we were successful, it still was very scary at times. And it's, I think the thing too that people forget is like, you know, you're going to have to promote it, but you don't realize how much work that is. Like, promoting a Kickstarter is a full-time job.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, I'll link to those blogs too, because I know that's a whole subject that could be,
yeah.
could be a podcast in its own, and it has been. Awesome. But yeah, what are your future plans for work coming up, or different conventions you're heading to, or just anything new on the horizon?
Well, by the time this comes out, New York Comic Con will be over. But if you saw me there, thanks for saying hello. my next shows are, I have Diversity Comic Con at also in New York, as well as Grand Rapids Comic Con in November. And then I'll be in Madrid in December. So if you're foreign, come say hello. We just announced a brand new Quantum and Woody book at Valiant that I'm very, very excited about, with, my Gwenpool co-conspirator, Chris Hastings. And I have a lot of other really exciting and spooky books that are going to be announced very soon, but I can't talk about just yet. But I'm very, very excited about them, and there's a lot of huge comics in store for Valiant in 2020 that I cannot wait.
Awesome. Well, yeah, this has been really great, Heather. Do you have one final piece of advice for someone just starting out building a geek brand?
Don't be a dick and do the thing.
Yeah, worth repeating.
Yeah, no, that's I think one of my biggest things, aside from, you know, don't be a dick and do the thing, is, you know, be confident in who you are. Own your brand, own your own authenticity, own, you know, like there's nothing more endearing than being yourself. And a lot of times, you know, when I meet people starting out, they're like, oh, well, I want to be a cosplayer. I want to be a YouTuber. I want to be a writer. I want to be an artist. To which I respond, well, do you write? Then you're a writer. You know, just because you're not Stephen King yet doesn't mean you're not a writer. If you write, you're a writer. If you cosplay, you are a cosplayer. Own that, be confident in that, because that confidence is going to carry on to other people. And the more confident you are in yourself, the more confident other people are going to be in yourself too.
Yeah, and the more of your own personality and weirdness you're able to put out there, the more unique you're going to be, and the more of an audience you're going to find.
For sure. Exactly.
Awesome. Well, yeah, this has been great. Where should people go to find your work and follow you?
Easiest place is at Heather Antos on all social media platforms. Just my name. And then heatherantos.com. I keep updated with all my recent podcasts, appearances, classes, speaking engagements, et cetera, et cetera. I keep that pretty updated, and feel free to reach out and say hello.
Awesome. Well, yeah, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me.
There you have it, guys, my talk with Heather Antos. Yeah, I really liked this one. And one of the things that bears repeating again is, you know, don't be a dick and do the work. And that's the kind of thing that, you know, in these creator communities, you really want to get a reputation as someone that is fun to work with. A lot of these industries rely on collaborations and other people being willing to promote your work and wanting to see you succeed. So, you know, if you're a pleasant person and someone who's fun to work with, that's going to go a long way no matter what you're trying to accomplish. And you also have to be someone that does the work. You know, getting a reputation as someone who is always putting the work in, Trying new things, trying to get better at whatever your craft is will also go a long way, and that will improve your reputation as someone people can turn to if they're looking to collaborate and know that you're going to be someone who gets it done. And that all kind of ties into the other thing we were talking about is, you know, putting yourself out there, both online, at Comic Cons, in different communities, you know, finding ways to expose yourself and get your work in front of a lot of different audiences and growing your reputation that way. And you know, I think that's also super important. So yeah, definitely give Heather a follow. She has a lot of other great advice on her blog, at heatherantos.com. And, she shares a lot of other great stuff on her Twitter at heatherantos. And yeah, check out all of her work at Valiant coming up. And yeah, I hope you guys enjoyed this. I'll include links to everything in the show notes at underthecapes.com/episode60, which, it's great to get to 60, you know, another nice round number. And yeah, I hope you guys enjoyed this. I hope you got something out of it. Please if you did, let me know, on Twitter or Instagram or wherever you happen to be listening from. And yeah, I will be coming back to you very soon with another new episode. Thanks. Thanks so much for listening to the Entrepreneurd Podcast by Under the Capes. I hope this episode has helped motivate you to either start or grow your geek brand. If you liked the episode, I would love if you could give us a rating and a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you happen to be listening from. And feel free to connect with us on social media, on Twitter at Under the Capes, on Facebook at Under the Capes, and on Instagram at Under the Capes Cosplay. Thanks so much, and have a great day.